Would it help if I unwrap my chocolate right into the mic? Does this sound, will this tell you anything?
Oh God, we are practically professional podcasters. We've been doing this for 2.5 years. You think you would have learned by now. That is the worst sound in the world.
Professional podcasters? You're clapping to find the mark in the thing.
Excuse me, Bob Ruff did that when we recorded with him. That is what professional podcasters do.
That is true, actually.
Welcome to another episode of True Crime Creepers, where we talk about all the real life creeps, from serial killers to con artists. I'm Kristen, the true crime fanatic who loves to tell these stories.
And I'm Mocap, the true crime newbie who hasn't heard any of them. Let's get into part two. I am on the edge of my seat. I've been waiting all week.
Yes, today we are back for part two of the Raffaele family murders. As a little recap, last week we talked about the murders of Sultana, Tariq, and Basma Raffaele, and how the police had zeroed in on their teenage son, Atif Raffaele, and his friend Sebastian as the culprits behind the murder, despite a pretty good alibi and a pretty compelling alternative suspect. There had been multiple tips from law enforcement agencies that the Raffaeles had been murdered by religious extremists due to some of Tariq Raffaele's religious views. But because there was no other evidence of the boys' involvement, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police decided to move forward with a police tactic so controversial, it's actually illegal in the United States and the UK at this time. And this is called the Mr. Big technique.
Mr. Big. I remember that.
Yes. And that is where we left off.
Why is it called that? That's what I want to know.
Well, basically, it's called that because what they do is they put the suspect under surveillance long enough to learn their personality, their habits, and then they kind of base their entire plan around that. And they get the suspect to believe that they're being tapped to join this criminal enterprise led by the mysterious, dangerous, and fictitious Mr. Big, who's basically made out to be some kind of like mafia kingpin. The undercover agents that are pretending to be a part of this underground crime ring will tell the suspect something like, oh, we heard you were suspected of a murder and now you've put this whole organization at risk. So Mr. Big wants to meet you and you'll need to tell him everything that happened because he can help get you out of it.
Or are people falling for that?
All the time.
That's wild.
So they set up a meeting with Mr. Big.
Wait, is the Canadian FBI about to, like, come down on you because you're sharing all of their super secret techniques? Are you going to have to, like,
I am not sharing their
redact this?
It's not like the Canadian force. This is on Wikipedia. Like, Wikipedia knows about the Mr. Big technique, so.
Okay.
And then basically the suspect just spills their guts to this undercover agent. You know, fully trained, elite interrogator these guys are, generally. So, because none of the physical or forensic evidence is going investigators' way, and they don't really even have much in the way of circumstantial evidence saying that Atif and Sebastian murdered these people.
They got nothing.
Definitely not enough for a conviction. They decide Mr. Big is the way to go. So, the two lead undercover agents...
Story is getting so... This is like... Really something here, huh?
I know. So the two lead undercover agents in the Burns Raffaele operation were named Gary and Al.
Yep, still going. We're still, this is
and
great.
While they were listening to the wiretaps, they'd gotten to know Sebastian and Atif pretty well, and they determined that Sebastian would be their best target for the operation. They decided that he was not able to see deception as well as Atif in other people. So... they figured Sebastian would be a better target. So once they figured out it was Sebastian they were going after, they waited for their perfect meeting chance. And they heard that Sebastian was going to be getting his hair cut at this certain time and place, and they thought that that would be the perfect place to stage the meeting. So they followed him there, and they saw where he parked, and they made sure that the undercovers parked right next to him. And so when Sebastian came out from his haircut, undercover agent Gary told him that he locked his keys in his car and asked him if he'd help him out by giving him a ride. And he said he'd give him $100 for his trouble. So Sebastian says no problem, and Gary asks if he'll have a drink with him. So trying to extend the conversation, that's kind of the point. And so they go and get a drink and they start a conversation.
Like, what if you would have said no? Like, I don't know. That seems weird. I would have been like, no, I'll call you like a taxi or something.
They probably would have tried again with a different agent.
Yeah.
So, and they, that's why you offered him $100. Like, they knew, like, they know enough about them to know they're not turning that down. Like, he needed money.
And that's 90s money.
Right. So they knew he wasn't going to turn it down. So they go and get a drink. He starts a conversation. And during this conversation, Gary starts talking about how you can make a lot of money doing this or doing that. And Sebastian tells him all about this screenplay that he and his buddies are writing that he needs help financing. And the screenplay was called The Great Despisers. And it was all about two best friends who are accused of murdering a family.
Yeah, yikes. That's not a good look.
Right. I'm like, this is like less than 2 years, just shy of 2 years after the murders. And I don't know if I, but I.
But is it also like, I'm not justifying it, but is it like, this thing has happened to you. You've been accused of it. You've been questioned. Like, this is a experience you've been through. And like, therefore.
And I don't think that we realize what that experience and living through that as an 18-year-old kid is really like. When you are accused of murdering your family, your best friend's family, people think that you're this monster. You can't get a job. You can't like live a life in public. You know,
right.
So you sit at home and you write a script about it. You write a screenplay about being accused of murder because that's what you know. And good writers write what they know. Right. So
and you maybe don't realize like how that's going to like.
Right.
Like in the future, people are going to be talking about it on a podcast and we're going to be like, ooh, that looks sketchy. You know?
Yes. That's why I hate pulling out like one or two things like that and saying like, oh, they did that. And why would you do that if you were accused of murder? Well, I don't know, because I'm not living a life where I'm accused of, murder. And having to deal with that. Like, I don't know. I think it can seem it just supports this idea that they didn't care, that they weren't affected by the murders. They weren't sad. Yeah. And the detectives had really tried to reinforce that narrative, saying that Atif seemed very nonchalant that night when the responding officers all said that he was inconsolable.
Right.
And so then like, in shock.
What's the truth there? You know?
And so, well, I think he went into shock. And so then detectives are seeing him when he's in shock and is like not really reacting and just kind of like whatever. Yeah. So Sebastian brings up this screenplay. He's looking to get financing and the undercover agent's like, perfect. I can help with that. You know, I think I know someone who can help you finance your screenplay, your movie.
Yeah. Well, so let me take you this way.
Right. So the next scenario was to deepen this relationship and introduce him to the next criminal element by getting Sebastian to move a stolen car. They wanted to make sure that Sebastian wouldn't think that Gary and Al were cops. And it's like you get him to do one little illegal thing. And then you get him to do another illegal thing. And then he thinks you have this like bond of criminality, you know? So it just kind of builds that relationship. So
that's how I feel you and I are right now. Like, I feel like I've been just like lured into this.
This whole thing was a Mr. Big tactic. All with the intent of the long game here was that you would confess to murder.
Corrupt me.
You've caught me. You figured me out. After this, they had phone calls planned and other jobs here and there to build the trust and build the relationship more. Basically, keep Sebastian wanting more because they'd pay him for all of these little jobs that he's doing.
Such a long process.
Yeah. And the more they interacted, the more Sebastian knew that something criminal was going on here, but they were very fuzzy on the details. But it was like kind of clear by the little comments they'd make and the way that they acted that they were like part of some criminal organization is what Sebastian thinks. So a couple of times, Jimmy Miyoshi came along with Sebastian on some of these scenarios. Atif never did, but Jimmy did a few times. Jimmy helped Sebastian count down a bag of money. Another time, one of the undercovers came in while Sebastian and Jimmy were there and put two guns on the counter, just kind of set these two guns down on the counter and told the two not to touch the guns because it was, quote unquote, still warm. So That's just like one example of like the little comments that they'd make, yeah. little things that they'd do to show like, hey, we're big, bad, tough guys, you know?
But like, are they going to get in trouble for these like little minor things they're doing that are like
no,
setups?
It's not.
Is it only to get.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. It's yeah. They're not going to be prosecuted on the counting down. Yeah. Because that's entrapment. I mean, that's like the definition of entrapment. Right. You can't do that. But it's just to get the confession. Yeah. But I will say that just by design of this whole scenario, again, it makes you look really bad. Like, oh, you're the type that would get into criminal behavior. So you must be a criminal and therefore you must have committed this triple homicide. Like, that's how it's going to look to anybody that doesn't, that just looks at it, you know?
Right.
So another scenario had Gary taking Sebastian to this building and had Sebastian wait outside while Gary went in and basically pretended like he was beating the crap out of some guy inside. Like Sebastian could just hear it, you know? And then I think he came out with like bloody knuckles and stuff, like fake bloody.
It's like the scene
knuckles.
From Ocean's 11.
Yes.
George Clooney's.
Exactly.
And he's like, how's
they
your mom?
Wanted to make sure that Sebastian knew that they would resort to violence and even murder to conduct business if they needed to. Gary told Sebastian that he'd done time for killing a guy, but that when it came time for the trial, Al had gotten rid of the only witness. And so
this is really.
Mm-hmm. And at this time, like I was saying before, Sebastian was really struggling. His name had been blasted all over the papers. Everyone thought he was a murderer. He could not get a job. And here are these guys who look like mobsters, but they're offering him employment, a way to make a lot of money. They have spent months building this trust, getting him to really want what they are offering. But to get there, to really show that he trusts them, they need him to do one last little thing. They need him to tell them what happened in Washington. So they kind of sit down with him and they basically tell him, like, we have to know what went on there.
Why you ordered a salad and wine.
Right. Because what we can help you, like, we can help get rid of it. We can help, like, whatever you like, but we need to know. And at first, Sebastian just tells them that he's not worried about what happened in Washington. He says that the only reason the police suspect him of doing anything is because he was at the house for a few days before and because they don't have anyone else.
Right.
He says that forensically, they don't have a particularly big case. But the Bellevue police had recently put out a press release announcing that they were testing DNA in the case so that the Mounties could use that information to make Sebastian think they had a really strong case against him in this Mr. Big tactic. So Al, who was the other lead undercover, he shows Sebastian this memo, this fake memo, making it seem like he'd been able to get his hands on it through his underground connection. And the memo said that there was both hair evidence and DNA evidence collected from the crime scene, which was true. But it also stated that because of the results of the hair and DNA testing, Bellevue PD would be moving forward with charges against Sebastian and Atif, which was not true because they didn't have anything to bring charges with them on.
But they're allowed to do that.
But they are totally allowed to do that. And they're allowed to do that here too. So it is annoying.
Well, that's what I was thinking. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But they're allowed to do that as police officers, not as this criminal underground ring in an undercover operation to coerce a confession. It's coercive. So when Sebastian sees this, he's pretty incredulous. He's like, yeah, this hair, these red fibers, those could have come from any time in the house in the past 5 days that I was there. Al insists that it is proof that he was involved in the murders. And Sebastian,
this is when I would start to get like suspicious. Like, why are you so hung up on this? Like, I'm not worried about it anymore. It's done.
Well, because
now you're like pushing the matter,
because he could jeopardize this criminal organization if the police are going to come and press charges against him, and he knows all of these things that they've been doing, and they could get him to turn on them. So they need to know everything that happened in Washington so that we can fix it, so that that doesn't go down like that.
It just feels like a lot for a little 18-year-old brain. That's what I'm saying.
Truly. I think he's 20 at this time. Yeah.
But still, like, I'm
not even a fully developed brain here that we're working with.
A Anyone that knows me knows I'm obsessed with hair care and more recently skincare. But it is so overwhelming. It's hard to even know where to begin. And I hear about all these custom beauty products promising to fix my dry hair and scalp, my damaged ends. But then I find out that after you take some quiz to get it personalized, it turns out they're just sending you some pre-made formula that's not actually personalized. Well, that is not the case with Prose. Prose is here to make all your hair care and skincare wants and needs so easy. And it's actually personalized. Each and every bottle of Prose custom hair and skincare is made to order and personalized with a unique blend of naturally powerful and proven effective ingredients to meet your needs. Nothing is pre-mixed and straight off the shelf, and it's actually effective. In a third-party, double-blind, dermatologist-supervised, controlled clinical study, aka the gold standard in research studies, Prose proved that personalization works better than products straight off the shelf. You can try it for yourself and get your healthiest hair in 30 days or get your money back. In fact, Prose is so confident that you'll love your results that they're offering our listeners an exclusive trial offer so that you can see the difference that custom care can make. 50% off your first subscription order at prose.com/creepers. That's prose.com/creepers for your free consultation and 50% off of your one-of-a-kind formula. prose.com/creepers.
And so then Sebastian starts to say maybe the police sent evidence to the lab and basically like fabricated this to frame us. Like, that is how Sebastian is explaining this memo. He's thinking that the police are fabricating this evidence to frame him because that's the only explanation he can come up with because he didn't do it. At least, I don't know. I don't think so. I think that's why he's having this reaction.
Yeah.
But Sebastian was certain that he and Atif were targets and that the police were going to try to do whatever they could to pin these murders on him. So now he's like...
I mean,
like,
that is feasible. I would be feeling that.
Well, and now he's thinking, I really need these guys' help. If they have this evidence, I need these guys' help. But he's not buying that this is fabricated. He wants me to tell him the story. So Al tells Sebastian, like, hey, I can find out what exactly they have on you, and I can take care of what evidence they have if you just tell me what's going on. I can fix it all for you and make sure you're not arrested. And at this point, Sebastian has been manipulated to believe that Gary and Al are members of a large, international, powerful criminal enterprise with a basically endless reach, with minions everywhere. And he has also been manipulated to believe that there's evidence against him that could lead to a conviction. So this is the spot he's in. And now I was introduced to a new word in this research. It was in the confession tapes, and that word is braggadocio.
And it's, well, I like it.
It's in the dictionary. It's an actual real word, which means to brag about something that isn't true. That's what braggadocio is.
Oh, I should be very familiar with, not me personally, but I feel like I've heard a lot of braggadocio in my day.
100%. One of the biggest problems with the Mr. Big technique is that it ignores the fact that criminal braggadocio is not only possible, but very likely.
It's like rampant. They love it.
Who's the guy in Harry Potter that bragged about being a Death Eater and they threw him in Azkaban and Harry was like super pissed about it? Stan Shunpike. Stan Shunpike was all braggadocioing it all over the place.
Wow.
And it landed him in Azkaban. Okay. So you think you're talking to a gangster. Like Stan Shunpike thought he was talking to Death Eaters. You know?
There were so many other like great examples, but I like that that's.
You want to seem, you think you're talking to this gangster. You want to seem like you're big and tough and bad. So you start bragging about crimes you never even committed, hoping to impress this gangster.
I mean, that's literally the whole thing of a con artist. Like Anna Delvey, all these people, like all they're doing is like creating this false sense, like bragging about all these things that aren't true. Like there's a whole genre of people,
but for
that
different
their
reasons.
Whole identity on that.
But
though.
Con artists have a different motivation than just like criminal braggadocio. Like this is like I'm trying to look big and bad and tough and brag about this. Con artists are like, I want something from you.
Yeah.
So better men than a 19-year-old kid have done it. And so Al asks him, So when did you do the dirty deed? And ew. Sebastian, yeah, I know. And Sebastian responds, during the movie. And he says it like just like that almost. Yeah. And so they got their confession. And Sebastian is not telling a story here. He's not like, we went here and then we did this and this is how we did it. At any point, he is he's just answering Al's
questions.
That's
what happened. They were murdered during the movie, like timing-wise, right? Like that's...
Yes. Well, right before the movie. Well, according to the neighbors, it would have been... The movie started at 9:50 and the neighbor said it was between 9 and 9:35 and then definitely over by 10:15 is when the murder was happening. But he's saying we snuck out of the movies and went. But like...
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's just answering Al's questions and this is all on video. This is all videotaped. And I might... I'm not an expert on criminal behavior. I'm not an expert on interrogations. And yet I'm going to say this anyway.
Oh, good. I like this.
To me, he seems reluctant in these tapes as he's answering Al's questions. Like a kid trying to put on a front of bravado. That's what it seems like to me. But a story emerges from his answers to these questions. So basically that becomes he and Atif snuck out of the movies, went back to the house and killed the Raffaes. Well, Sebastian did all the killing while Atif sat in the living room and did nothing.
Oh, he says that.
Well, he's like, that's what he like. He doesn't say that. He's answering questions and they're like, what was Atif doing? I don't know. Nothing. He was around the corner. I mean, like.
He's not like telling. Yeah.
Right.
He's filling in the blank more than like.
Right. He's like, what was Atif doing? Nothing. He was around the corner. He didn't see anything. He didn't see me do it, is like what he's saying. He said he did it in his underwear to avoid getting any blood on his clothes. And then he
explained the undies.
No, it wouldn't. Because he said then he threw the underwear away. And he asked him, Al asked him about the underwear in the washing machine. And Sebastian was like,
how do you know that,
Al? It definitely wasn't.
How do you know where my underwear is?
Well, he read the police report, I guess, of the thing. It was in there.
What a weirdo.
But Sebastian said, no, it definitely wasn't the underwear in the washing machine. Definitely not that underwear.
Don't you worry about my chonies, Al.
Yeah. Then they showered the blood off of their bodies afterwards, and they used a bat to commit the murders. He's not telling Al anything that wasn't in the press. Anything that he didn't already know about how these murders were committed. They didn't find out anything new. He's like, he's not saying anything that, and this is probably the scenario that like he worked out for a screenplay or whatever.
Yeah. You know? God, I forgot about that. So much has happened in this story.
I know.
Like truly, we've had it all.
I know. So after Sebastian gives his story, Al says he needs to meet Atif. Atif had no idea that Sebastian had even been involved with these guys. About any of this. So the first time he's meeting Gary and Al is the day after Sebastian has confessed to the murders.
Great.
Atif later described meeting these mobsters as like Alice finding Wonderland. Like they're introducing them to this whole other world that they had no idea existed. And it's a little scary and it's a little exciting, right. And he was convinced that the Bellevue police were actively trying to frame them, and that these guys were their only hope of avoiding jail.
Right.
That's like the mind frame they're in.
And you're like, you truly believe you're going to jail. So like, aren't you trying to do anything? Like you feel like you got nothing to lose.
Well, and Al just keeps telling them how they're so freaking close to going to jail. And he knows it because of things he's read and his sources on the inside. And these comments, he just keeps dropping these little comments. It's not like he's sitting there giving them a lecture on it. He just keeps dropping these comments about how close, you're so close to going to jail. And so these comments are just making Sebastian and Atif feel more and more dependent on him to save them, essentially.
Right.
So Al asks them why they did it. And Sebastian hems and haws and doesn't really have an
answer. Yeah, that's what I want to know. What's the motive here? And I don't think it's those little life insurance policies because we don't even know how to work life insurance or insurance, period.
he did not kill his parents for life insurance. He's going to Cornell. I mean, like, he did, whatever. I guess we've seen.
Less,
and he wasn't lying
still.
About going to Cornell. Okay, he actually was attending. And then, I mean, Sebastian basically says they did it to set themselves up to be more successful, to be richer, I guess. So for the life insurance money.
Not buying it.
Al asked them how they chose the bat, and they said it was a mutual decision. And then they said they put the bat, the VCR, and the Discman in a series of dumpsters all over Seattle. And that's how they got rid of all of it. And you'll never find it.
Stupid Discman. Like, who cares?
I know.
It just feels like a constant, like.
So then they bring Jimmy Miyoshi over to meet Al because they're not really sure if Jimmy had anything to do with this or not. So they bring him over.
Right.
And there is a telling part of these tapes that I think shows Sebastian's frame of mind here. So Al asked Jimmy, like, hey, you knew what was going on in the States and you didn't rat him out. Like, good on you. And Jimmy says that there was nothing to rat them out about because he didn't know about anything. And yeah. Sebastian explains to Jimmy on this tape that if he just tells Al that he knew about it before, that would show him that he's a trustworthy, that would show Al that Jimmy is a trustworthy person because he knew about it and
if
he didn't
lie
say anything.
About this thing,
then he'll then trust you more.
Right.
Exactly. That's what he's thinking. I just have to get these guys to trust me so they'll help get rid of this evidence the police have fabricated against me. That this is really what I think. I don't know. I don't know, but I think. So now Jimmy tells Al that he knows now who committed the murders and that it was Sebastian and Atif. Criminal braggadocio or true confession? We'll never know.
We'll never know if it was the braggadocio.
So the two were quickly arrested and held in Canada while they decided on extradition. Washington at the time had the death penalty. It was abolished in 2018, but they still had it then. And Canada had a policy against extraditing prisoners to countries with the death penalty, where they would be facing the death penalty, which makes me sick to my stomach that we have policies in place that make it so countries like Canada don't feel right extraditing prisoners to us.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Like, I don't want to be in that. Company. That is not company I want to be in. The countries that we don't want to extradite people to because they might die, that's not the company I want to keep, okay? But y'all know my opinion on that. I think I've been pretty
clear. Are you moving soon or what?
So, no, I'm just going to keep talking about it.
Okay. Cool.
So, anyway, Washington, like, pinky swore that they wouldn't use the death penalty against a Sebastian or a Atif. And so they were extradited to the United States. But this whole process took like 6 years. So Sebastian and Atif are just sitting in a Canadian federal prison for 6 years while they work all this out. A maximum security pretrial.
Like, what if they
facility.
Didn't do it?
Right. Then they've just been in prison for 6 years. Yeah.
But it's like, what if they did?
That's like before you are even
on trial.
Guilty. That's before you are convicted. You are spending 6 years in prison. I don't think that's right. I just do not think that's right.
Right.
Atif was offered some kind of pretty sweet deal if he'd testify against Sebastian. I don't really know what this deal involved. Sebastian's dad in the confession tapes just called it a sweetheart deal.
Ew.
Yeah, but he turned it down. He told Sebastian's dad that he just couldn't do it because it wasn't the truth. Which.
Yeah.
Jimmy Miyoshi was threatened with being charged as a co-conspirator, but they
I'd be pissed.
I think he probably was really pissed.
But I'm also not going to room, even if they did it or not, it's not like, they haven't caught who has done it, so I'm not rooming with these guys. You know what I mean?
They were friends from high school.
Yeah, but like, if you had friends from high school that you really, really trusted, and they were potentially, they were just, you don't even know, they were just in the news for killing their family. And you don't know, you still are going to room with them, even if they're your like good friends from high school?
I honestly think when I was 18, yeah, I probably would have. Especially if I didn't have, yeah, I probably would have. I also think that boy friendships are different than girl friendships.
That is a little bit. Very true. Can confirm.
So, yeah. So they're threatening Jimmy Miyoshi to charge him as a co-conspirator. But then they offered him immunity if he would testify against them. So Jimmy moved to Japan.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Before or after, like to avoid that, or he like,
I don't know, the timing, or like the timing is a little suspicious. It's seeming like he is like, I do believe that
sayonara,
literally. Is Japanese, but yeah, exactly. So during pretrial motions, the defense argued that the confession tapes should not be allowed in because they were obtained using a method that is illegal in the United States where we are having this trial.
That's true.
But because the boys were in Canada at the time and investigators were following Canadian law, the tapes were allowed in under international treaty, which doesn't seem like the purpose of an international treaty.
International treaty. That's interesting.
And that just is so lucky for the prosecution because there was no DNA, no fingerprints, no murder weapon, no opportunity, literally nothing but a high school play and a prayer without these confession tapes.
High school play and a prayer.
There were more issues with these confessions.
How is this still going? This is wild. Like, we've had... Name one thing this case is not had, other than circus animals, and we're not over yet. So.
I know. And there were more issues with these confessions than just the way that they were obtained. There were all kinds of inconsistencies between Sebastian's story and the evidence from the crime scene. Like, they didn't match. Mm-hmm. He said Atif did not physically see any of this happen, that he was basically waiting in another room while Sebastian went on a bat-clubbing rampage.
Oof.
But there was blood spatter in Tariq Rafay's room that showed the outline of a person, as if the blood is spraying and it hits the person and then the wall.
Yeah.
So there had to have been another person there. There was also evidence. I meant to actually look into this and then forgot. But there was evidence that, like, the investigators determined, like, the crime scene investigators determined that there had to have been at least three killers in this based on the evidence at the crime scene.
Oh, my gosh.
So that also didn't fit his story because Sebastian says it was just him and Atif.
And really just him.
And really just him. Yes, exactly. Sebastian said they committed the murders after sneaking out of The Lion King, which was a 9:50 showing. And it was also the only weak point in their alibi. It's like the only time he could have said. Like, when I heard their alibi the first time, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, they left the movie. Like, that's obviously the part.
I do like they called it, like, sneaking out. Like, you can just leave a movie.
Maybe I said that. I don't know who said sneaking out. But it was a 9:50 showing. The neighbors said they heard the murders occur between 9 and 9:35 and that it was for sure over by 10:15. So it doesn't really fit with the timeline. The theater was over 20 minutes away from the house. There were also inconsistencies between when Al spoke with Sebastian and when he spoke with Atif. So,
would the neighbors have seen the car? Like, they would have had to drive a car back to the house from the
movie. I don't think the neighbors were, like, peeking out the front window. I think they were just heard stuff.
Oh, maybe didn't realize what they were hearing at the time.
Yeah.
I'm a very nosy neighbor. I'm always peeping.
Yeah, you are. And you get you get a lot of rewards that way. I don't notice nothing, but you're like, something's going on over here.
Mm-hmm.
I think you just have an abnormal amount of things that go on at your apartment
that
complex.
Is true. We got our lease renewal and I was like,
Okay, so there were inconsistencies between when Al spoke with Sebastian and when he spoke with Atif. So Al's like, where did you get the bat? And Sebastian tells Al that they found the bat. And Atif said they bought it at a store in Bellingham. And that
you're
both of them...
You're not going to go buy a baseball bat for this specifically.
No, you're not. Well, and that's what Atif is saying.
You have, like, blunt objects in your house. You don't need to, like...
Go buy a baseball bat. Right. Yeah. So he says they bought the baseball bat. Maybe they wanted it as, like, a poetic end because of rope, because of the play that they changed the rope to the baseball bat. Maybe that's why they decided to commit this murder with a bat, if that's what happened. But Atif said they were both at the store when they purchased it. So Sebastian, who's like, you're claiming he's telling the truth when he says he murdered them at the movies, but now is he not telling the truth about how he got the bat? And then they never found any evidence that Atif and Sebastian purchased a bat at a store in Bellingham. Sebastian said that they threw their clothes out in the dumpster, and Atif said they threw it out the window. And there's also the issue, And this is what I was saying earlier, that by design, Sebastian is shown on tape to a jury participating in fake criminal tasks. So you're already predisposed to think of him as a person not like you or me, you know, someone that would actually participate in something so immoral. Oh no,
the people think that of me thanks to you out here with my like, all this, my criminal history you've been sharing. But yeah, they've set them up for failure.
He's been devalued, not someone right. worthy of reasonable doubt in a fair trial.
Right. Well, thank you for that. If I ever need
you're welcome.
That.
Yep. Anytime. I got you. One of Sebastian's lawyers, a woman named Teresa Olson, she actually flew to Tokyo to talk to Jimmy Miyoshi about his testimony. And after speaking to him there, Teresa was certain, oh, I remembered what we haven't seen yet. This is what we haven't seen yet, okay?
A flight to Japan?
Get ready for this.
Didn't see that coming.
Nope, get ready for this. So after speaking to him there, Teresa was certain that Jimmy had been leaned on and that she was under the impression that he wanted to come back and withdraw his statement. And so she came back and she is so excited. She's thinking, this is going to turn the whole case around. I'm going to get Jimmy to withdraw his statement. She went in to tell Sebastian at the jail, but apparently she was very, very excited because at the jail, she had sex with him.
What? Wait.
There. At the jail. Three.
This woman.
Three officers saw it happen.
Who is she again?
His defense attorney.
The defense attorney had sex with who?
Sebastian in the jail.
Okay.
Three officers.
You can do that? Like when it's not one of those visits? It's just
no,
like,
you really can't.
Oh, well, she did.
But she did. Three officers saw it happen. She had been working on that case.
Does that come up? Like, are they like in? I don't know. Like, does that just. I know it's coming up right now, but like, is anyone like, hey, girl?
Yes. Yes. Okay. Because three officers saw it happen. She was removed from the case. Yeah. She like lost her job. Like she does not like work anymore. You don't. She's like hiding out somewhere.
You think that. But we've had murderers be therapists. So.
Ew. You're right. Oh, I forgot about her. What was her name? Candy. Candy Montgomery. Candy. Is a therapist now after. She didn't she also use a baseball bat or an axe? No, she used an axe. Jesus.
A lot of axe okay. stuff.
Well, Teresa Olson, the defense attorney, had been working on this case for 34 months as a public defender. And now Sebastian is going to need new
she
counsel.
She couldn't tame the tiger. She lost all that work.
Yeah.
That right there, that is the definition of risking it for the biscuit, you know? Everyone's like, what's that mean? What does it mean when you're like, oh, risk it for the biscuit? That right there is what I mean. That's it.
Yeah. And so now this trial was pushed back again, delayed for another 2 years.
I need this episode to end. Where are we at?
We're
this
close.
Is too much for me.
And Jimmy Miyoshi's retracted statement was no more.
Oh, I bet. Why didn't she just hook up with Jimmy? Save that for over the palm before she came back. They weren't like in a relationship. She wasn't like dating Sebastian. It was like a hookup.
I don't think so. Yeah, I think I don't Whoa. Think so. Yeah. So the trial finally began on November 23rd, 2003.
10 years later, huh?
10 years after the murders. And with the tapes from the Mr. Big operation, they didn't stand a chance in hell at a fair trial. I don't care how many expert witnesses and false confessions you put on the stand, which I don't think they were allowed to put any on the stand, but I don't care if they had a whole line of 27 experts. If you see a video of a 19-year-old bragging about killing three people, there's no way you're not voting not to convict. I'd actually like to see data on how many acquittals there have been where there is a confession as part of the evidence. Because I know there's data on like how many false confessions there have been that were false. But I wonder how many acquittals there have been when there's a confession involved. Because I bet there's not many.
Yeah.
And we know that there are false confessions. Like we know that.
Oh.
But I bet they're getting a guilty verdict almost, I would think, 100% of the time. Like, I don't actually know, but if you have it on video, if you have a videotaped confession, I could not imagine a trial where you're acquitted when you're on video saying you did it.
Confessing, yeah.
The new lawyers decided that they were going to use the fear defense to say that Sebastian and Atif were terrified of the gangsters, and that's why they said what they said. And for that reason, they didn't have anyone come on to testify about criminal braggadocio. Not that it would have mattered, honestly. I don't think that it would have mattered.
No, people would have been like, that's made up, even though it's not. Didn't we have a case where there was some word or there was something that's like an expert tried to come explain and they were like, no.
Where it was like something that sounded outlandish that actually mm-hmm. was real.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, it was the case, the kid, I forget what it's called, influenza or the.
Influenza.
What is it? Affluenza.
Affluenza. Yeah. Exactly.
I said influenza. That
so, and that is not a real thing. Affluenza is not a real thing. So that's, right. And so that's, yeah, sometimes expert witnesses aren't really experts and don't really know what they're talking about. So
I do kind think of, affluenza is real. I do.
It's not a real defense. I think it makes you a real asshole, but it's not a real defense.
We're going off the rails. Too much.
So the jurors were absolutely disgusted by Sebastian and how flippant he was about it all on this tape. And if he's telling the truth, yeah, it's absolutely disgusting the way he's talking about these murders. One of the worst people I've ever seen in my life, if he's telling the truth. Yeah, because he's just like, I killed them. He's just so like whatever about it.
Right.
Regardless of the circumstances, honestly, but because they used this incredibly manipulative tactic to coerce this confession, I just can't even see it as evidence. And I can't believe it was even allowed in. I cannot believe that. So the judge allows in this evidence that's literally illegal in the United States. This would have been obtained illegally here, but it's allowed in. But he ties the defense's hands at every single opportunity. They weren't allowed to bring up anything about the terrorist organization that there had been 3 tips about from
I don't understand that.
Like, police organizations was not allowed to bring it in. Yeah.
Why?
I don't know.
All the information.
I don't know. I don't know.
Like, as a juror, I want that information.
Yes. Me too. I would be so pissed if I voted to convict somebody and put him in prison for life. And then I got home. And I heard about 3 tips from the FBI, the Canadian Royal Mount, the Mounties, and the Intelligence Division of the Seattle Police. You have 3 tips from all of those saying that it's this terrorist organization, and I just convicted 2 20-year-olds for this murder.
That's all my beef with Scott Peterson. All this I don't know what the information the jurors had, but all these things that just we left out, like there was all these murders, you know, it's like there are key pieces of information that just like don't make it with the rest of the information. I don't understand that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. So I think it's because part of a judge's job is to make sure that neither side really is allowed to just throw anything at the wall and just see what sticks.
Right.
Like you can't just do that. And so they're trying to condense it to make sure that it's not just we're going to. But these are solid tips.
It's like your
tips.
Discernment.
There was no evidence. I think it was like there's no evidence that these tips were valid because they weren't investigated.
Yeah. like that's my.
Whose fault is it that there's no evidence that there was any validity to these tips?
Not like theirs. I don't know. I don't know whose side I'm on.
They weren't allowed to bring up anything about that. They weren't nothing about any references to the possibility that someone was mad at Dr. Raffae. So nothing about the True East 1 or 2 degrees off from East papers that he'd written, lectures that he'd given. No references to that terrorist organization, Al Fuqua, that had ties to his murder. So really, all the jury was allowed to hear was the state's evidence. They did get to hear about the fingerprint found on a door that didn't match anyone in the family or Sebastian, as well as about the blood found in the bathroom that was Tariq Raffae's mixed with someone else's that was also not Sebastian or any of the Raffae's.
Yeah, those
and
are big.
And wouldn't that someone whose blood is mixed with the victim, wouldn't they have to be the killer? And they're like washing their own blood off of themselves along with Tariq's that splattered on them. After they murdered him so viciously? So who is that person? Because that's the murderer.
They're saying it's Sebastian.
But it's not his blood. That's not his blood. So whose blood is that? Because that's the murderer. There was also blood found in the garage mixed with Tariq's that was unidentified. There was forensics in this case. And you're going to tell me that Sebastian and Atif were just that good, that they were able to get away with leaving nothing behind by taking a shower except the blood of someone else. They left that blood behind, but got rid of all their own. But the boys were fans of Nietzsche, and I guess that trumps forensics, because that was entered into evidence at the trial.
That?
Yeah. That they like Nietzsche, and he's like all about, is our morals even valid? So obviously they have no morals. Their behavior was, of course, made a huge deal of, because that's like all that and the confession tapes are all they got. Alif didn't check on his sister. Why would they wait outside on the curb if they were afraid the intruder was still inside? Why would they flee to Canada on the day of the funeral if they were innocent?
Yeah, I'm still not loving that.
And of course, why would they say they'd done it if they hadn't done it? Jimmy Miyoshi did testify at the trial, and he was one of the most obstinate and uncooperative witnesses the DA had ever had to examine on the stand. But he did testify.
Oh, no, never mind. I was like, he's mad his girlfriend got fired, but that was
Bastian, yeah, at the jail. But he did testify against Atif and Sebastian and testified that they had told him about the murder. They'd told him about getting rid of the VCR. He also testified that he was working for an American corporation in Japan, and the DA had called up his employer to tell him about Jimmy's role in their murder investigation. And Jimmy testified that the company had led him to believe that if he didn't come back to the U.S. and do what the authorities wanted him to do, that they would find a reason to fire him.
Wow.
I mean, the coercion here used in this case is absolutely unbelievable. Threaten him with prosecution, threaten his job, his career. He'll say anything. You can't believe what he's saying when you do that.
Yeah, he's trying to get out of it as quickly as he
can. And he might be telling the truth, but you cannot rely on that testimony when it's so coerced, when he has so much riding on him saying this.
Yeah.
I mean, this whole thing is just sad to me. The jury found Sebastian and Atif guilty of murder because, of course, despite the tight alibis, the lack of physical and forensic evidence, the jury convicted them on 3 counts of homicide.
I am surprised. Wow.
I'm not, because of the tapes. There's no way I'm sitting in a jury looking at the kid telling me that he did it without having gone through 2 years of looking into false confessions and not saying he said he did it. So he did it.
Right.
Especially with no alternative suspects. Like,
man. See, this is the thing. We're never going to be on a jury, but I could see you going in there and the first time someone's like, well, they said it on the tape. And you're like, here's the USB for my PowerPoint. Yeah. Let me show you all my 200 slides on false confessions. You know, it's just that's the thing is like people don't like we should be allowed on juries.
And it's like interesting because you can see when it's a false confession.
Yeah.
If coercion is involved. I don't know, but sometimes that criminal braggadocio, when they're bragging about it, I'm like, they did it. They're bragging about it. I can't stand them bragging about it. Not them in this case, but just like in other cases.
Like the people that get a whole mural tattooed across their chest, like so detailed.
Yeah, that was in our dumbest criminals mini creep. That was a good one. Sebastian and Atif maintain their innocence even at their sentencing hearing, where Sebastian was allowed to give a statement, and he spoke about how they had been convicted of a crime they didn't commit and how they were unable to have a fair trial because they hadn't been allowed to present evidence about another suspect that knew what the murder weapon was before anyone else did, even the police, and how they were prosecuted with a tactic that was illegal in the country they were being convicted in. He said they were not able to present evidence to answer the state's case, that he hadn't been able to give critical evidence to explain the state's case, and that they were defending themselves in this trial with both arms tied behind their backs. Mm-hmm. He said they were convicted because of their arrogant personalities. Sebastian said that when this whole thing happened and the media would report all these things about him, he would be inconsolable, and he had learned to deal with it through cynicism and acting tough. He wasn't allowed to go to school or get a job or have a public life, and that's how he dealt with it. And this is when I originally was going to say the part about he does kind of have this air about him that is a little off-putting. And I think that's just like, I don't think there's anything to that. I think that's just how it is, because I think they're like British, because his dad's like British. So
British people are going to come for you. But you're look, right. I mean, I cannot be.
I'm an Anglophile. Okay. I love the Brits, but you got an air.
You got an air.
Certain parts of England there have an air of superiority, and don't tell me you don't. The judge said his The judge said his recitation, just like we, I mean, there are certain
girl, I'm from Texas. You don't got to explain it to me.
In the United States, that I would say like New England, you know.
I'm too big for my britches, for sure.
The judge told Sebastian that his recitation was chilling in the lack of remorse he showed for the victims. He told him that he had no moral rudder whatsoever, that he was an amoral person, and that he was an arrogant, convicted killer, and that he was convicted based on his own chilling, casual confession. He was given 3 sentences of life in prison without the possibility of parole.
Oh, wow. Man, I should be a judge. Just getting to, like, weigh in on people's moral compass. Like,
Well, just Kristen, to their face. Just, like, straight to their face.
Your values are trash.
Well, you told me that last week.
I did?
Splish, splash, your opinion is trash.
See, I'd make a really good judge. Don't even get me started on your opinion of cookies. You're out of here.
Oh, that was in the mini creep too, the splish, splash, your opinion is trash. Atif also had an opportunity to speak, and he too insisted on his innocence. He said that he was mortified throughout the trial by the lies that they had told, the masks that they wore, but that they'd done it to survive an appalling, atrocious situation that was constructed to elicit those lies from them, which is true. He said he was tormented by the thought that he'd been manipulated into contributing to the fact that his parents' killers will never be properly investigated. He said the loss of his...
Yeah, there's people that got away with it.
Yep.
We think.
He said the loss of his parents devastated him, and he had no idea how to reconstruct his life in the weeks and months after. He said he admired his father's brilliance and that he was closer to his mother than he ever will be to any other person, and the memory of her wit and charm are dear to him, and that the memories of his family will be with him always. The judge told him that he found him genuinely remorseful, despite the fact that he had literally said he hadn't done it, that he'd maintained his innocence the whole time. He said he thinks he does have a moral compass, but it's difficult for him to say that he was lying then, but he's telling the truth now. He said again that he was convicted on his own confessions that were very casually given, and he also was sentenced to 3 counts of life without the possibility of parole.
So that's it? Like... Today, like an Adnan situation here?
I don't think so. Today, the Canadian Supreme Court has ruled that the Mr. Big Technique is no longer admissible in court. Today.
Then shouldn't we retry all of the cases?
I think so. You should look into them because you obviously see they're problematic.
Yeah.
Sebastian spent about 10 years in solitary confinement, but now his family gets to visit him about once a month. His dad says they just deal with it because they can't play this game of what if things had gone differently. It'll drive you insane. Sebastian has now exhausted all of his appeals. So, like, without new evidence. Atif got married in prison to a woman named Loretta who visits on the weekend and they speak every day. And he has one appeal
left.
Wait,
how did he meet her?
They write. Like, women write to...
Oh,
murders.
Yeah. I thought, yeah. Okay.
That's what I'm assuming.
So she wasn't in prison.
Well, no. They don't have boy-girl prisons. And that is the story of the Raffet family murders. I mean,
Whoa.
Just such a wild one. I know.
Speaking of casual, and that's the story. Like, you just did a 10-minute read-along in your class. That's all I got for you.
And I'm sure. That's all. That's all. And I'm sure I left some stuff out. There was a lot to this case.
Okay. Here's who I want to shout out.
Who do you want to shout out?
I want to shout out myself for sticking it out.
I want to thank me.
Yeah, I want to thank me. That's it.
Shouts to MoGap for sticking it out, being with us on this journey. So what do you think? They definitely didn't do it, right? Or they did?
I need more information on the, I mean, I think like, could it have been them and they, you know, they moved the body to be facing the east and all of these and like the mention of the Walkman. Like there are things that feel very like calculated, like almost too much, but. How do you say? Like, but who's the other blood? Who's the other fingerprint or what? Like, who is that person?
That's, yeah.
But it's like, could that have been someone that came over like earlier in, you know, like a friend?
And,
that
but
came,
the blood like, was mixed together with Tariq's.
Oh, but blood. Not
that's
the,
what, yeah. And it was blood. That's what gets me. It's like the bloody palm print that Jodi Arias left that was mixed with Travis's blood. It's like. Yeah. You did it, girl. You did it. Like, that's that your girl, blood.
That digital camera.
Yeah. And the camera.
Girl, you dumb.
Girl. Yeah. So I just, this is my thing is like, if the only way that you can catch a murderer is through an extreme coercive, manipulative tactic like this, then you can't catch them. Like,
right.
You just can't.
Then and that I think murder that's goes sad. Like
it is sad. Know? We want all murderers in prison. That's where they belong. But now a potential terrorist is not in prison because we're so certain that these 18-year-old kids were behind it. And I tell you, the first time I was like, they're blaming it on terrorists. Are you kidding me? But the guy knew that it was a baseball bat 2 days before the murder. And he's telling the police that he knew it was a baseball bat before the police even knew it was a baseball bat. So it's not like
why is that stuff not like in the court? You know, like
yes,
hello.
I don't know why the judge didn't let that out.
That's new evidence. That's new evidence. Somebody like use that.
Surely he must have used that in an appeal at some point. I'm not sure. There is a website that I used pretty extensively called the Rafay Burns Appeal.com. And it's got a lot of information on there. It's obviously pro Atif and Sebastian. Mm-hmm. It's like their appeals. Yeah. So it's a pretty biased source, but it does have a lot of information on there. And there was a lot of flack on the confession tapes about it being biased in favor of Atif and Sebastian. But the detectives and the DA had more screen time in those two episodes than anybody else got to tell this story. Like they had there was no overarching narrative. There was no like Keith Morrison giving the story in the background. It was all told by the talking heads that were in the documentary. And that was the detective, the DA, Sebastian's like high school girlfriend and college girlfriend, Atif's college and high school girlfriend, and Sebastian's dad. Like those are the people telling the story. And the detective and the DA had more screen time than anybody else, or at least as much. So they had equal time on both sides. Their evidence just wasn't as compelling. Their reasons for thinking that they were guilty were not as compelling as the other people saying they didn't do this. So
I don't know.
Lord, I don't know.
Ugh, I hate it here.
I know. Well, all right. Well,
thanks for that.
Yeah, you're welcome. That's all I got for you. And thank you so much for listening. If you want to support the podcast, you can find us on social media. We are on Instagram at CreepersPod. Join our Facebook discussion group, the True Crime Creepers discussion group. You can find us on Patreon at patreon.com/truecrimecreepers and on Twitter. And also, I do have to say, so sorry that I have not been on Twitter like pretty much ever and have never checked our mentions.
And that you flame me for using it?
Never checked our mentions because People, well, I'm terrified. Look, I'm terrified of Twitter.
I know.
Because people are so mean.
And yeah, but they have like way less characters to be mean.
I'm so terrified.
Like Liz's review would not have fit in a tweet.
No, they just do threads then. Are you kidding? They would just go on and on and on forever about how much they hate us. And I'm so terrified of that. But all of the mentions we had were so nice. And it looked like we just ignored you. And we didn't. I'm sorry. But I read them and I loved them. So.
Wait, I feel like I had my alerts on for mentions. Maybe I just missed
it. Well, you haven't replied to any of them. So I don't think you did.
Oh, whoa. Fired.
I'm just saying, I don't think you saw them because none of them had been replied to. So. I'm not saying that you should have replied to them because I know that we're not really on Twitter.
We are on Twitter.
Well, occasionally you
tweet.
I think
I like that's like part of our like Fast and Furious Waffle House and like not really on Twitter. But
not
like on
really
Twitter.
On Twitter, but like kind of. Like we have a profile and we tweet every now and then. Yeah. We got a DM that I think you'll like.
Is it my mom making fun of me? Because that's her new favorite thing. She's been sliding in my DMs and like making fun of my baking. I like baked a cake and it got stuck to the pan, but I greased the hell out of this pan. Like I used half a thing of pan and I took it over to Mary Frances because, you know, she used to be a chef. And I was like, Mary Frances, can you get this out of this pan? And my mom is like, I put it on my Instagram story because it was really funny. And my mom is just hammering me with DMs about like how I'm a terrible baker and how I didn't grease the pan and. That would never happen in her house. I mean, she's just like hammering. I'm like, are you kidding?
No, it's from Tiffany. And she said, I joined Duolingo after I heard you talk about it last month and I'm loving it. Muchas gracias. Te amo, Creepers Pod.
Te amo.
Oh my God. And I just realized I've never replied to a single DM. But no, I love that.
Now look, it's just hard. Okay. It's hard to keep up. De nada, Tiffany.
Okay, that's what I'm saying. De nada, Tiffany.
Gracias.
Gracias.
And we just said you're welcome. Thank you. That's all.
Laughing face, heart. That's all we got. Un ticket to un boleto a Santiago.
Yeah. Yo tengo una maleta.
Okay, well, that's it. Goodbye.
Adios. Bye, peeps and creeps.